Hi, I'm Annika Ventura, and for the pilot episode of Naive and Wise, I talked to Carla Delgado. Carla runs a permaculture farm in Cavite and finds herself living in one in Palawan. She and her family are spending time in the base camp of Tao Philippines, a tour group known for its sailing expeditions in the region. Way more than a tour group, Tao Philippines is a model for business that blends well with community. And I'm super privileged to have Carla chat with me about what life has been like there. We start with Carla revisiting what permaculture is.
My partner, Amina Bal, and I came in. We brought in permaculture and regenerative agriculture. And the difference being organic means chemical-free farming, but you could be growing chemical-free food in depleted soil.
Yeah.
So permaculture is about regenerating the soil and looking into soil health, working in harmony with nature.
Yeah.
So using, you know, natural inputs from the surrounding forests around the farm.
Okay. Yeah, and so it's so interesting that you run a permaculture farm and you've been living in a permaculture farm in Palawan for the past...
Yeah, it's a happy, don't know if it's a coincidence, you know, but feeling very like our time here is a gift because yes. A permaculture farm by the sea is really... a model that other places in the Philippines can follow because you have abundance from the sea and then you have abundance from what you're growing, and you can grow in permaculture language, they call it a food forest.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, farming that doesn't require a lot of human effort. You plant it, take care of it, and it'll give you food. So they've already been doing that here, and it's really great to see. So in a way, it's an ideal place to be during a global pandemic like the coronavirus pandemic and the lockdowns and enhanced community quarantines we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
Also, really, like, I already knew that Metro Manila was not a sustainable place to live because there's 20 million people and all the food pretty much comes from outside the city and is trucked in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of food creating a lot of traffic. Like 30% of the traffic of Metro Manila comes from food being brought into the city.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. But when you're in a place like this, you know, we're growing local, we're sourcing local. So the fish we eat comes from fisher folk who are just villagers nearby, and then all our veg comes from the permaculture farm plus the farm itself.
Yeah, your backyard, like, now, right?
Yeah, but then also supporting small family farms that are growing food nearby. So like it's mango season now, and you know, we're buying mangoes from a place that sells a lot of mangoes. And so for the veg that doesn't grow here, we also support villagers and give them income. And what's nice is there's no middleman. It's just you and the banca, and then you and the small scale farmers nearby. So they get the cash directly.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. I want to maybe revisit that later of how you guys are kind of managing the resources and the flow between the locals. Mm-hmm. But just to backtrack, the reason you went on the Tao Philippines expedition was because you organized it for EO Philippines, right? Entrepreneurs Organization.
Yes, my husband organized it.
Yeah. And did you guys... arrive in Coron, and then at the end you sailed to El Nido, so that's why you're in the base camp of Tao Philippines now.
Yes. Yeah.
And
And we packed, I mean, we packed for a 5-day remote island expedition.
Yeah.
So paulit-ulit are out.
And then
but you realize how little you need to be so happy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's no mirrors. There's no mirrors here. We haven't, like, seen ourselves.
Except when you take pictures.
Yeah. We see, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
but
you,
it's liberating.
Yeah, I'm sure. You guys arrived in Palawan March 12th, and then you left for the expedition March 13th. Just to backtrack. And then President Duterte declared the enhanced community quarantine March 16. So that means it was while you were in the expedition that
So instead of doing the full expedition, we cut it short actually. And then did the final days in the base camp.
Oh, so were you not allowed to do island hopping anymore?
Yeah, not everybody was supposed to pretty much stay put.
Yeah. When did you guys arrive? Like, what date did you arrive in the Tao base camp?
I think the 16th or 17th.
Oh, okay. And how did, like, who decided to leave and who decided to stay in the base camp?
So the day before our trip, the eve, actually, late that night, the president and his cabinet were in a meeting, and they were already talking about a possible lockdown.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people who were on the expedition were not comfortable continuing on because their families were not complete. So they had, you know, like, husbands who came without their wives and, you know, with one son only, but the rest of his kids back in Manila. So those families felt better about going back to be with their families during a lockdown. So the ones who stayed were like us, where
you're complete.
Leon and so we were complete, and another family that was complete decided to stay. And then two single people without a care in the world, you know, decided to stay. We were kind of hoping they'd fall in love with each other.
That's your entertainment there. Like,
yeah, we were quiet and all.
Yeah. Where is Kai, your other daughter? Now
she's she's okay. She's also in a good place. She's in Colorado.
Oh, okay, that's good. What were your main considerations when you decided, you know, apart from all your family being complete, what were your main considerations when you decided to stay longer at the base?
Like, friends were, like, messaging that, hey, it's gonna, you know, there's a lockdown, you better hurry back. And in my mind, I was like, why are we gonna hurry back? Like, Metro Manila is not a place you want to be in a lockdown. There's no food there. So immediately, I guess, because I'm in the food business, like, it just made sense to me. And also because we love nature.
Yeah.
Like, why are we going to be in a lockdown where there's no food, where you're trapped in a building, basically?
Yeah.
Between four walls. For me, it was a no-brainer. But I had so many friends who were like, better hurry back, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a different mindset. And luckily, like, our whole family has the same mindset. We feel like being here every day is a gift. And we're just loving. It's been a really liberating time. And we also realize, I guess, that we're kind of, it might be a struggle to go back to living between four walls in a building.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. Because, you know, here we're living in sustainable huts, bamboo huts that are really completely open to the elements. And we haven't been in aircon for a really long time, and you don't need it because behind us is a mountain and a forest. So the air is, it's like aircon, but it's better because it's from the fresh forest, and it's cool.
Yeah.
And then you have the sea air. So the combination is really healthy and it's alive.
Yeah. So the base camp, it's in the north of El Nido. Is that correct?
Oh, I don't know if it's which direction it is, but it's 3 hours by boat and 1 hour by car from the town.
Ah, from El Nido town. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's actually the town is south of us because we're kind of towards the northernmost tip.
Okay.
And of the mainland.
Who lives there with you now?
We're the only, I guess, if you could call us guests.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is from Tao, Philippines. And so, like, their head chef who trains all the cooks who go on the boats, she's here with her family. So it's all people with Tao,
mm-hmm,
who are continuing to farm. And now that it's not packed with guests, they have time to kind of do the R&D for new dishes. So it's been a time of creativity.
It sounds like your paradise.
It is. So it really is. Like, I couldn't have dreamt this up. You know, it's just exactly what I love.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to be, you know, in a farm kitchen. Like, when I imagined having a farm kitchen, I would picture the kitchen here because it's open, it's gorgeous, and so it's just been fun to be cooking here and just using all local ingredients.
And I would imagine that the other luxury is time, because they're not, you know, in normal business just trying to attend to tour groups.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah. I feel like time feels very sort of expansive here. There's time for everything. And I realize how much time we were wasting inside the car in Manila. When you think you're being productive, like you leave your house and then it takes so long to get wherever you're going, coming back. We waste so much time in the car, and that's like, okay, because we just shrug. That's part of life.
Yeah.
You know, but when you come to a place like this, there's time for, like, I feel like I have so much more focus and clarity with work here because my life is balanced. Like, I have time for workouts, for morning swims. Before I even have coffee, I'm out swimming.
Yeah.
So then I feel like, you know, your circulation's already going. You're starting the day with so much peace.
Yeah.
Sometimes I snorkel so I can see the fishies just starting their day. And it's like a meditation.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, you're awake now. Like, your mind is awake and you're ready to go. So it's like, when you bring that kind of clarity to your work, things are a lot clearer, I think. And then there's fewer distractions. In the city, I feel like I have so many distractions.
Yeah.
Then I can walk to my workout. There's like a jungle gym here that Leon has been helping to build with the Tao guys.
Uh-huh.
And it's so cool. It's like weights. It's all like repurposed stuff.
Yeah, so like a bamboo pole with tires.
Bamboo pole. Yeah.
Okay.
So I can just walk to the workout with him. In Manila, he does CrossFit in the box, and he goes at like, it's his workout is at 6:30, and there's no way I'm going to like sit in the traffic to get there. You know? But here I can just work out with him, and our daughter joins us. And so we have time for that. And then I've kind of taken, where I'm talking to you now is what I call it's my meditation prayer reading room.
Okay.
And it's basically just a hut. They call it a tower toka because it's kind of elevated, so it's windy. And they call it toka because it's in the shape of a beak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the simplest thing, but, you know, to have time to read without distraction, and there's so much time for everything. And it's really because everything is walking distance and I can just go to the farm. I'm also really learning my own. It's like I'm immersed in my work, but getting to do work and family time and, you know, getting healthy and strong at the same time. It's really kind of ideal.
Yeah. And can you describe, like, you know, in the family WhatsApp group where I'm a part of, you were talking about, you know, your neighborhood. Like, can you describe, like, what it's like in the beachfront? Because it's like familiarizing yourself, right, with the surroundings.
Yes. Yeah, so every morning, I've been starting my day with a swim. Uh-huh. And we've been getting to know the reefs all around us. And you kind of get to know, like, the neighborhood is the fishies, right? So, like, there's, like, families of clownfish in this area and that area. And then your eyes kind of tune in to things that you don't see the first day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're looking with city eyes. But then once you kind of, like, you start seeing things that you didn't see before because you're just looking much more, I don't know if carefully is the right word, but so getting to know different pockets. Like yesterday I discovered a tunnel that I had never seen before just because I was at a certain angle and the sun was hitting that spot. And I could see that it was a tunnel that beautiful, surrounded by fish. So seeing things again, second time, third time around, and really getting to know the neighborhood. The neighborhood being like what's above water and also life below water, life in the sea.
Yeah. So you guys, what?
And today, by the way, Leon finally got to swim with a turtle that we just been seeing his head pop up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Leon just got back before you called and he was like, I saw the turtle.
And he got to swim with it.
We got to swim with it for a while.
That's so nice. What is your perimeter? Like, are you allowed to leave the base camp?
No. In Palawan, it's also enhanced community quarantine that's kind of entering into a general quarantine, but they still want people to stay put. So I just heard today that the mayor of El Nido is not allowing, you know, the visit to small lagoon, big lagoon, the tourist things.
Yeah.
Because he wants nature to regenerate. So, you know, I'm like a fan of this mayor now. That's what he wants, nature to regenerate. Wow. You know?
Yeah.
Like the world needs more people like him.
Yeah. So,
or her. I don't know if it's a her.
Okay. I like what you said about, like, at the start, seeing things through city eyes. And now that you've been there for, I understand, more than 50 days, you marked your 50th day last April 30, if that's correct. What else, like, other, you know, quote-unquote island skills have you picked up?
Oh my God. So my daughter Uma says, Mom, I'm an island girl. Like, we don't flinch anymore when we see, like, huge, like, red ants, like, climbing on us. We'll just be a bridge. So it'll climb up one hand and then it'll climb across our shoulders and then down the other hand and just come down the table again.
Got it. Like, instead of, like, running.
Like, yeah,
oh my God.
And then also, like, the tuko, we're not, like, freaked out anymore. We realized that, like, we share the hut with tuko. And I think we would have been, like, kind of really frightened as the city eye people. But now, like, now actually we look around and we can see them. And it doesn't, like, freak us out anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, so stuff like that. Like, you hear a critter running and you don't get scared. You just kind of, oh, you know, it's whatever that is.
Yeah.
You become, I guess you realize you're just a visitor in their ecosystem.
Yeah. Okay.
And that we're all, you know, we're all living here. Like, one doesn't have more of a right than another.
Yeah. And like when you've been sharing pictures in our group, like, it looks like paradise, you know, like the water and the sun, but I'm sure it's different, like the pictures in real life. So what has been sort of the trade-off for you? Apart, it sounds like there's a lot of good, but I'm sure there are also sacrifices.
I think the one thing would be, like, the payment for all this is, like, Nick. Have you heard of like
nicknames? Yeah, the sand flies.
Sand flies or sand fleas.
Ah, yeah.
So in those the beginning, intense. When we first arrived, it was like, oh my God, nicknames. But like, I would gladly pay the price of nicknames to be out of the four walls that I would have been in a lockdown in Manila. You know, it's like kind of a small price to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that.
Yeah.
And then, but then they, you know, they kind of were all, I don't know if you've heard of this oil, Kuan Long. It's from Singapore.
No, I've never heard of that.
It's kind of like the Singapore equivalent of white flour.
Okay, I can imagine that.
So this is like the secret for dealing with nicknick. They don't like the smell because it has eucalyptus.
Oh.
So you just put it and they don't like it. They won't come near you. And then in case you do get a bite, you just put like a little dot of this little oil and then it doesn't itch anymore. So it was kind of like scoring this Kuan Long was a big thing for us. So now we're okay. We're like, wow, we scored a bottle each. Okay.
Yeah. I went on a Tao tour in 2017, and like, to be honest, the thing that I had a hard time with was the bathroom, because mm-hmm. I didn't like having to flush other people's stuff, because I think not everyone would know how to, you know, flush with with a tabo. So
were you the only?
I was the only Filipina. Yeah, I was.
Okay,
the
first time I did the Tao expedition, I was also the only Filipina who wasn't crew.
Yeah,
and yeah, I can see what you're saying, because the whole tabo is like part of the Philippine, right? Like we grow up knowing how to use the tabo.
Yeah,
but anyway, yeah, here I guess it's pretty luxurious, the base camp bathroom.
Okay.
We don't have that issue.
Okay, that's nice.
Like it's, yeah.
So how many times have you gone on a Tao tour?
This is my third. My first was with my roommate from college, who she's a filmmaker in NYU. She teaches film there. And she was coming to the Philippines to do a film project. And I said, you can't just see Metro Manila. That's not the real Philippines. We got to go out.
Yeah.
And then I had heard from another friend who lives in Palawan about this Tao expedition. So I looked it up, sent her the link, and I was really surprised when she said, let's do it. I was like, wow, okay.
What year was that?
That was 2016.
Okay. And then the second time was?
Second time was 2017.
Okay.
I came back with friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I personally have experienced like long-term travel when it's like more than a month, and I find that there's that adjustment between, you know, traveling short-term and long-term, because long-term you start to have to deal with everyday things like the bank, money, your phone bill. So how has that been like for you? Like, does it still feel like you're on vacation?
If it weren't for Leon, we would have been in trouble with payments and all, because he's the online guy. He's got all that sorted. So thank God he's like that. And it's thanks to his connectivity that we've been able to work here.
Yeah.
Because I don't even have signal in my cell phone provider.
Okay.
Because the mountain blocks the signal. But he brought two phones. So he has two service providers, one of which has signal. So he hotspots us. And that's how I get Wi-Fi. That's how I've been able to join Zoom meetings and be in touch with my team on WhatsApp. And so it doesn't feel at all like vacation mode, where we're definitely working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And like, how have you managed to, you know, still work? Like right now, Kai Farms, you know, you're still selling your produce from Cavite.
Yes. Yeah. It's yeah. thanks because I have the right team in place.
Uh-huh.
You know, it took us a while to get the right team in place, but now they're in place, and that's why we're able to have the sales that we do the deliveries. And honestly, it's worked in our favor because people are home, and because yeah. of the pandemic and they're worried about their immune system and catching something, they really want to eat healthy and they want to eat like chemical-free fresh food. So now there's total like belief in what we offer.
Yeah.
And because we're considered an essential business, we're in food, we're allowed to deliver to customers. And then one of our advocacies has been to encourage people to grow their own food in the city.
Yeah, that's so timely.
Yes. And like, now people are ready.
That's so, people yeah. are ready. My yeah. parents have been doing it.
Yeah, fantastic. They
started growing their own food. Yeah, it's yeah. amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks that it took this pandemic for people to get pushed towards it. But it is, I think, nice to acknowledge the silver linings.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So people are ready to grow your own food. So we have these mini edible gardens that have been available for a long time. But uh-huh. now they're really selling, and because it takes three and a half months to get the vegetables like established.
Uh-huh.
And we've been experimenting with what are the vegetables that will grow well in the city.
Mm.
So we were doing that for a year before this happened.
Oh, wow.
So then now that it happened, you know, we already had all these edible gardens that are like resilient, easy to grow, nutritious, and
yeah.
you know, very flexible in terms of culinary uses.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people have been ordering from us, and they also they've been ordering a lot of soil and yeah. Seedlings.
Sorry, you said like you were testing what produce would grow in the city. Is it because it's different from the produce that you're growing in Cavite, right?
Like what thrives in a cooler climate like Silang,
yeah.
because we're in the hills, so the air is cooler. We're like might not grow in Manila, which is hot uh-huh. because it's all concrete, and the concrete yeah. like bounces around and creates even more heat.
Yeah.
So we're also experimenting on what will grow, even if you have a balcony or a window that gets sun, you mm-hmm. can, you know?
Like depending on the space you have.
Yes.
In Manila. Okay.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. what are you picking things up? Because, you know, you're living in a permaculture farm in Palawan. Have you picked yeah. things up? Like new
I love
things?
The sound of that, Annika, by the way. I'm living in a permaculture farm.
Yeah.
That sounds like a dream.
Yeah, it is. It is a dream. And, you know, I understand what you mean. It's like, there's a sentence I thought I would never say.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, yeah.
So are you picking things up with the way Tao does things in their farm that you're learning about, like that yeah, you can apply because, in Kai farms?
Yes. I mean, well, Kai farms, I guess, like we're learning from each other. I become really close to Anne. Here she's the head chef, and she's really into farming.
Yeah.
So we kind of learn from each other, share stories of what works or doesn't work, how they do things. And then it's a different climate. So for example, here you can grow watermelon and sinkamas. In Kai farms, we tried, and uh-huh. it struggled because it likes sandy soil.
Oh, okay. Yeah, can you,
so you kind of learn? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I also want to know more like the difference in setting. Like, oh, a farm, like you're saying, a farm in Palawan would be different compared to a farm in Cavite.
Yeah, but then there's some that there's like overlap. For example, both farms, Kai farms and the Tao farm, talinom is a staple crop that it just grows so easily. It's full of antioxidants. It's resilient. It's Philippine spinach.
Yeah.
That grows really well here, and it grows really well in Kai farms.
Okay.
So there's overlap. And also red amaranth grows really well here and grows really well in Silang.
Okay.
I guess because these are things that are important to know, because as we face a climate emergency and extreme weather conditions, it's getting harder to grow food because your harvest can be wiped out. So for example, in Kai Farms, when Taal volcano erupted, we're not next to the volcano, but the winds carried the ash fall and covered everything in our food gardens. Yeah. So we lost everything that was like being harvested, ready for harvest, ready for seed saving, and we had to start over. And so those things like extreme weather, extreme typhoons, it affects farms like incredibly. So knowing like what the resilient crops are is really helpful.
Okay. So like the crops that would be resilient in a beach setting would be different in a mountain setting, and the climate also.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, but then there's overlap.
Yeah.
There are certain things that are resilient in both locations.
Yeah. Do you guys, like, because you mentioned, like, you get to buy mangoes from other, locals and stuff.
It's like 50 pesos a kilo for mangoes. In the city, it's like 200 a kilo.
And what's the difference in taste? Like,
with the here, there's definitely no chemicals. Like, because I've been eating organic for a while, when there's most of the mangoes that you get in a grocery or they're super sprayed with chemicals to get bigger and also so the bugs don't get them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm eating a mango and I can tell, and I don't want it anymore. So here there's definitely no spray in anything. So that is, for me, that's like a luxury.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I found that the food on Taal Philippines was the best Filipino food I've ever tried. What have you guys been?
I think so too.
What have you guys been eating?
Oh my God. Every meal is amazing. So for lunch, we had sweet and sour fish.
Oh.
Yeah. And really delicious ripe mangoes, which I started the meal with.
Yeah.
And then fresh veg. We had like okra, ampalaya, sitaw, pechay. And every meal is a dream.
What do you guys have for breakfast? Like, what are some of the meals?
Yeah, so we've been having like turmeric rice.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of turmeric grown locally. So we do like a turmeric rice, and then there's a like hard-boiled egg inside. And then sometimes they put like pusit, dried pusit.
Yeah.
Which just comes from the cratch that they dry themselves and then they fry it to a crisp. They call it island bacon.
Oh my gosh. That sounds yeah. so good.
Yeah. So breakfast is like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then once breakfast was really like unexpected. It was oatmeal that had been soaked the night before in coconut milk. So it was really like, and then it was soaked in like a chiller with ice. So it was cold and chilled.
Yeah.
But then he served it with like mango, ripe mango, and dilis.
Oh my God. That sounds so good. And you guys are experiencing like their experimentations, right? Because you said you're doing R&D right now.
Yeah. So one of the other surprises was he being Gino. Gino's like a visiting chef here.
Uh-huh.
Who trained in Thailand. So he and Anne are just a dream team. And he and Anne made like chocolate cake and ganache. And then they had some from the night before. So they put it like in layers in the oatmeal. So when you scoop the oatmeal, there was like a surprise chocolate layer. That was pretty cool. I was like, whoa, this is like a dream I never knew I had. <You know? laughs>
What about for dinner?
We're so spoiled. We're so spoiled.
Yeah. What about for dinner?
I think that's part of the happiness. Dinner is also like a dream. I mean, there's something like, because they're experimenting, so they made like paradise pizza. Like everything is from scratch. So it made the dough. Yeah. And then there's an oven here. And then everything was what was available that was veg. So there was like pan-fried soft eggplant and fresh herbs. And then instead of like cheese, he put like an egg on top. So mm-hmm. it looks like bright yellow in the middle. And then he bakes it in the oven. And then puts like fresh roasted pepper on top. It was so good.
Yeah. Wow.
And of course, fish. Fish like I've never eaten in Manila. In Manila, I don't even buy fish. And Uma said today at lunch that we're so spoiled because the fish we eat here is really like caught today or yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no like, you know, it doesn't, in Manila, it's been dead for a while by the time it gets to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you guys are spending every day like as if you were, you know, booking a hotel, but it's the farm. Like how much do you have?
No, I think that's a good question. I think like here, I think Tao, it's not a resort and it's not a hotel. It's like a homestay.
Yeah. So how much do you have to spend every day to stay there and also the meals?
Okay. So the normal Tao rate is what we paid for the expedition.
Yeah.
But after that, we kind of, because the partners of Tao are friends of ours, we negotiated like a lockdown rate that I'd rather like keep between us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of like a, you know, friends and family rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're super grateful to them for that.
And how is their business doing now? Because I imagine, you know, they had to stop doing the expeditions and stuff. And this is summer for them, supposedly.
Yeah. Their busiest season starts November, December, Jan, Feb, March. So I guess like April and May, voila. But so the way they're looking at it is their low season just came a little bit sooner.
Mm.
So normally they would send everybody home anyway, and then they would get to spend time with family, fishing, go like earn a living from fishing. So in that sense, it's like built in resilience because they're not all relying only on salaries. So for part of the year, when Tao is not in operations, they're taking care of themselves. They have other forms of livelihood and income. So that just came 2 months earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So example, like, you were saying somebody sells mangoes. Like, how, mm-hmm. who do they sell these things to? Like,
to Tao, because Tao normally would have, like, almost 200 guests.
Yeah.
In one time on different boats.
Yeah.
So because they have that many number of guests, they already have like networks of sourcing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So those people who would normally provide them with fruit, produce, fish are still coming.
Okay.
But not, of course, in the same amounts, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how is the local government in Palawan handling the pandemic? Like I remember you shared how they came over just to kind of do a census.
Yeah. So we had a health worker come and monitor temperature to make sure nobody had COVID.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they gave us, like, a health certificate declaring we were, like, COVID-free.
Okay.
And I think it's really because of the nature of the province. It's wide open spaces. People are getting sunshine, vitamin D. They're eating fresh, nutritious, nourishing food. Like, it kind of, like, in that sense, you're, like, the people of Palawan are strong and healthy. And the people of Tao are some of the most happy, healthy, empowered Filipinos I've ever met.
Yeah. That is like one thing for me that stood out when I joined the expedition. Like I mm-hmm. got to see the social aspect of sustainability, because it's not just about yeah. the environment, but I was able to observe like how it's about how you work with the community, and yeah. and that's something I'm impressed by with them. You know, like the employees yeah. seem happy. And not, yes, and they totally. Also seem like challenged. Like I remember Anne yeah. was talking to me about how example, someone working in the kitchen, she would see him as a younger boy, and then later on he would be intimidated to try and, you know, be a chef, but they train them.
Yeah. Yes, they give them training, they give them exposure, they take them, you know, the ones with promise and potential, they take them, they get them a passport, and they get to see another part of Southeast Asia. And that becomes part of the reason also they want to stay on, yeah. you know, because they're valued and appreciated as human beings, and they're given opportunities for learning and exposure that they might not otherwise have. And what's nice is they're not OFWs. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to do this in their own backyard. They have work that has dignity and yeah. where they are valued. Whereas if they went to the city, they would just be, you know, with construction jobs, living hard lives, and not eating very nutritiously.
Yeah. And I know that Tao also, like, puts up schools, right? So did that have to stop?
Yeah, for now, like, all the foundation work is pause muna. Like, they're continuing to, like, they give work to the women of the community by getting, coconut oil that's made by the women in their homes, so they don't need to leave home. They can do it while their children are napping. So they're continuing to buy that coconut oil to make soaps and shampoos that are natural. But in terms of, like, building schools, like, all those things are on hold, Nina.
Yeah.
Because their revenues are on hold, like pretty much most businesses in the world right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Their revenues are very affected by the pandemic and the lockdowns.
Yeah. And what has it been like living with, you know, other people at this time? Because I imagine, like, a common question some people would ask is, if you were stranded on an island, who would you want to be with?
This is the ideal crew, I must say. They're really, like, lovely, talented people. I mean, you know, like, and everybody has a different skill set, and they're also just really, like, light, easy people to be around. Like, nobody's like a complainer, you know. So I must say the group of people we're with are kind, awakened human beings who are lots of fun, you know. Yeah. The other night, like, we decided to, once a week we all have dinner together.
Okay.
And then
okay.
we played music, we were dancing, and it's a pretty fun bunch.
Yeah. And you have dogs.
What's that?
And you have dogs too, right?
Dogs. Oh my God. Dogs are a huge part. Dogs are a huge part. So even the dogs were dancing with us that night. So the dogs here are so free. It's kind of like what a dog's life can be. That's kind of like their life. They're never on a leash. And because they're so free, they just have the discipline to behave well. Like, the dogs are not begging for food. They go into the water, they come out, we're not worried about them. It's amazing. And I think it mirrors the human experience here as well. It's like how life can be when you're happy and free.
Yeah.
That's what it feels yeah. like. So it feels like the dogs and the humans we're living are like...
Living our your best life. Carla, baka hindi ka na umalis dyan.
I know. It's kind of... I'm a little bit worried about that.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I mean, honestly, we're trying to figure out how to make a living here. Seriously. Because it's been an awakening in terms of, why are we all there in Metro Manila when there's this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why are we attached to that city matrix?
Yeah.
There's reasons. I mean, sometimes it's because our families are there, or whatever, it just, I don't know. But there's also so much, life is happier and healthier out here where there's sunshine and fresh air and space.
Yeah.
And I think that got even more magnified. And, you know, now that there's this lockdown, I can't imagine being in Metro Manila during this lockdown. And I know it's not a happy time for a lot of people, but on the flip side of that, Mother Earth and the sea really needed this time to, like, a breather.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's been really good for the planet. So badly needed this time for regeneration.
So if you had the choice, like, all practicalities aside, would you guys just stay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bumalik.
Really thinking of school, what school, you know, like, yeah. But we're kind of trying to figure out how to make it happen, because also it's the responsible thing not to be crowding Metro Manila, you know. It's just not sustainable. Yeah. It's almost irresponsible to be going there, creating the traffic, because the traffic is not something that's created by other people. It's created by us as well, by being in our car and getting places.
Yeah.
And requiring food to be trucked in, you know, yeah. All that.
And that's how Tao Philippines started also, right? Like, the founders were just touring Palawan. They bought a bangka, I read. And, you know, it just kind of happened organically that they didn't leave anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they go. I mean, they spend half the year usually in Europe. So they are, like, part of the world outside as well, outside of the Philippines. I think that's what's nice about the Tao Group, that they're super local, super huge impact on local communities, but they bring a global perspective. And I think that's why they're so tuned in to sustainability and things like permaculture, because it's like, it's what people who are switched on in the world are into.
Yeah.
They just get it, that this is something we need to do to have a planet we can live on in the future.
Yeah. So what is next? Like, do you have a return date?
Yeah, every time there's an extension, it's like, oh, too bad. You know, like, we were not, like, sad at all. So now I think, like, diba, May 15 is the next, and then there's going to be, like, a lifting of things. So I think we're looking at that time to start making our way back, so we can, you know, be back with our business and see our parents. It's been a while. You know, I miss, like, I think the only thing I miss is our cats at home and our family, especially my parents and my Lola.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. I don't miss the aircon at all.
Yeah.
Certainly don't miss EDSA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing that, you know, I feel everybody is really being confronted with what makes them happy and function at this time. And just having distance from anything, you know, distance from your normal routine, from your, like, normal job and everything. So it's nice that you guys were able to kind of reinforce, like, I remember you said, like, you, like, what sea people you are, like, discovering what sea people you are.
Yeah. It's kind of nice that we're all like that pala. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
We're just as into it. So Leon was a dive master long before I met him, but our diving days didn't coincide.
Yeah.
We've never even been on a dive together. So this time has been a time of, like, you know, we also have, like, couple time out in the water early in the morning. We're, like, holding hands there as we snorkel. It's, like, cute. So it's really romantic, actually.
Holding hands in the water.
And then for our daughter to be really into swimming, you know, we've been taking, like, swimming lessons with lifeguard kuyas just to, like, improve our stroke.
Galang.
And all that. And parang we're stronger now than when we arrived, because every day we get a little bit stronger. So it's also been great to to be seeing like how we are, like our active selves, getting to know our active selves.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And also having time pala to like learn new skills. Like I finally learned how to make virgin coconut oil.
Wow.
Whoa. Yeah. And then I learned how to make soap and I learned how to make shampoo, you know, all this like natural products that I had always wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. So having time to do that has been great.
Yeah. Sounds like you're a kid in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Going on this ride. It's like, okay, well, take Carla to make virgin coconut oil.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah, I really am. I really am happy here.
Okay, I'm so glad to hear. Yeah. So I remember I saw a post in Kai Farms that was talking about how after the Taal volcano eruption, the soil kind of regenerated in your farm.
Yes.
Are you observing anything with how like nature is regenerating in Cavite now and in
Palawan? Yeah, super. I'm glad you asked that. So we were worried when the volcano erupted, covered the gardens. It looked really bleak, you know? But then like you see the resilience of nature because like the eruption was on the 12th of Jan.
Yeah.
And then the 13th, like the garden was completely covered in ash, gray. Oh. And then like maybe like a few days after that, there were like these little sprouts coming out, green things popping out from under the thick ash, and it was celery.
Yeah, I
and
saw
it
that picture.
Saying like, yeah, it's yeah. like I'm alive. So yeah. You also see, we got to see what is resilient, and those are lessons because of the climate emergency, right? To know what's resilient and what will survive. And then I was worried that the volcanic ash might make the soil too acidic.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't. Like we've been testing the soil and it had a positive effect. So the soil is 7 pH, which is neutral, which is the ideal soil you want to grow food in.
Yeah.
And then the ash kind of mixed in with our permaculture soil, which we had been building and regenerating and healing for all these years of doing permaculture. The ash was a good addition. So the vegetables are growing really beautifully because of that little addition. So it was like getting like free natural fertilizer when mixed with our permaculture soil. So in the end, it was like a good thing.
Yeah.
So it kind of regenerated everything.
And what about in Palawan? Like, are you noticing or are the locals talking about how the ocean seems cleaner?
Yes. Well, we haven't had that much interaction except for everybody who's already here. So, but even like from our own observation, it's definitely, it looks like it's clearer. It's so crystal clear sometimes. Like, it's like you're in a glass of water, but you're in the sea.
Yeah.
And today when I went swimming early in the morning, it was so clear and there were so many fish out that it felt like I was in an aquarium, but it was the sea. Like it was that clear. I could see so far and it was just suspicious. So that's kind of how it used to be when I started diving a long time ago. And you don't really see that anymore. So even these 50 days, the ocean is recovering.
Yeah.
And then just to like add, like kind of like this morning I saw like little fishing boats coming near. And I felt like, no, don't fish here because the fish here are our friends, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, they're our friends. Don't eat them. But then I realized I had a shift because I realized seeing this like skinny dad with his skinny kids, I realized these guys need this food to eat, you know? They need this. And they're not overfishing. They're just getting what they need and they're doing it responsibly. So you also kind of shift. You know, I was like on the side of the fish and then I realized, wait, this is what they need to eat. They don't have cash to go to whatever, a grocery. This is where they get their food.
Yeah.
So it's also like seeing things that way after being here so long, you know?
Yeah, that's nice. I feel like the highlight of that also is that they're fishing just to get enough, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. As compared to the industrial boats.
Yeah.
Which during the expedition, we passed a couple of really big boats that are permanently out there that don't even come back. So they're fishing 24/7. And then boats come pick up their catch and bring it to sea. I don't even think that should be allowed. It just doesn't, it's too much, you know, not to give the sea a break.
Yeah. So after, you know, all of this, do you feel like, you know, your original sort of advocacies with Kai farms and permaculture has been reinforced? Or do you kind of look at it differently as well?
I think like the journey that I've been on for 6 years of permaculture kind of prepared me for this time that what the world is going through now, because now I feel like we need to start building resilient communities. Because at the rate, this was before the pandemic, just to give some background.
Yeah.
I was already starting to think of identifying locations to build resilient communities where we're growing food, there's a water source. You know, it's not, it's how to be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic, like, kind of made it even more obvious that this is something we need to do. We need to, people have to have that skill set of growing food, because you can't take it for granted that there's going to, like, the current food system,
uh-huh.
It's not a sustainable food system, because the planet is warming so much that the seas are rising. So the science is pointing to within like 6 years that the sea levels are going to rise to a point that coastal settlements and cities like Metro Manila are going to be flooded.
That's,
and then
so
you're going
near,
to have a situation.
Like 6 years.
It's not far at all.
Oh my gosh.
It's not far at all.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have climate refugees. And where are these people going to go? You know, so I feel like those of us who get it, we need to be starting resilient communities all over the country that have access to the sea, but that are also at a higher elevation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like this whole time of farming and stuff has just prepared me, because I think you need to grow your own food. You need to know that it's a life skill.
Yeah.
That I think more people should take responsibility for. I think we're so used to, you know, the whole idea of like going to the grocery, buying things in little like plastic bags of this or that.
Yeah.
It's not really a sustainable thing anymore.
And I guess it's also because, like, apart from hearing warnings in the news, it's only now that we're confronted with like what would happen if you can't feed yourself, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you realize how vulnerable you are living in the city with no access to food except the grocery that you have to like line up for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice that, I mean, you with the idea of building resilient communities, you're able to get exposed to the ideal setup, right? Which is the base camp.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And before this all happened, I was in Iloilo for this Organic 4.0 conference by the Ecosystem of Sustainable Agriculture. What is it? Ecosystem of Sustainable, of Stakeholders of Sustainable Agriculture. And these are people who are already growing food, who know that it's getting more challenging because of the climate emergency to grow food. So we know that what we're faced with, we know it's pretty serious what's happening to the climate, because we work with the land, we work with the elements, and we're in touch with what's going on in a way that maybe somebody who works in a glass tower and takes the elevator up to work is not in touch with what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a sense of urgency. And at this Organic 4.0 in Iloilo, we were able to identify resilient towns, transition towns, as like an urgent need that we need to be seriously looking at.
Okay.
So we're ready. And just like years ago people warned of a pandemic, and then you know what I mean, so we can already see what's happening. So that's why we have a sense of urgency about getting these things done.
Yeah.
And we're starting to work on it. Like, one of the guys there was a mayor from Lanao del Norte, and he converted 6,000 hectares into organic.
Wow.
By converting his entire municipality. So it's doable. And yeah. So he knows how to work with LGUs. So kind of knowing people like that and working together, like he started a league to convince other mayors in the Philippines to turn their municipalities into organic. So now their goal is 1 million hectares of organic in the Philippines. And he started this program because his town, Kauswagan, was really like caught in the crossfire between the military and rebels.
Yeah.
And the poverty rate was like 79%. It was really bad in 2008. So yeah. He started something called the Arms for Farms program. So instead of guns, he gave people like seeds and soil and taught them how to plant. And now everybody has food on their table three times a day that's organic, you know, because the scale was so huge, everybody can afford organic.
Yeah.
It's not something na mahal or,
yeah,
you know, only wealthy people can, because you're growing it yourself. Yeah. And then there's community gardens, there's your own backyard. So when I see his pictures, I'm just amazed at the abundance of that regular Filipinos can have if they just like own this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's really encouraging that the answer to food security, it's not agriculture, it's industrial agriculture. It's backyard, small scale farming by households and families and community gardens and food forests. It's yeah. not that hard, but yeah. you know, you kind of just need to show people it's possible, which this mayor is doing. His name is Romel Arnado.
Yeah, interesting. And we have the resources, like mm-hmm. with our land yeah. and stuff.
Exactly.
It's Siam.
We're like in such abundant land. Yeah. It's not like we're in a desert.
Yeah.
We're in like tropical, lush, yeah. fertile land.
Okay. Interesting. Like just last question. I wanted mm-hmm. to go back to before you started getting involved in Kai Farms. I read in an interview with Rappler that you shifted from being a writer and journalist to mm-hmm. realizing you wanted to get into farming, because you joined a workshop which asked you what bothers you most about the situation in the world today, and you answered how unsustainable and toxic our lives are. So I feel like maybe there are some people going through that same, like, what's my purpose, you know, question. And what were you going through during that time that made you kind of like feel that urgency?
I think I've always been, I was on the periphery of what I was really meant to do as a journalist. You know, I was writing about the environment and writing about food, but I was on the periphery. Now I'm doing it. So I think, like a lot of us in our search for what we're really meant to do, where sometimes it just takes a while to get there. But then once you put out to the world that you want to find your purpose or you're ready, then the universe kind of puts you together with the people who are going to help you and who you're going to help. Like, that's what, ever since that time, I just feel like my life's been like that. I'm always meeting the people that are going to help me manifest my highest purpose and who I'm going to help manifest their highest purpose. So like
a synchronicity. Sometimes,
like, yeah, totally. I totally believe in that. And I think we have our highest purpose as individuals and as a collective.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's beautiful, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it shows also in, you know, things panning out and also the way you start to look. I mean, you look super healthy. You look so young, actually. You look younger
Thank you.
Than when I first met you.
Oh my God, that was a while ago.
You're in your happy place.
Yeah. Are we allowed to say how we met?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so Annika was my student long ago.
I was Carla's student in nonfiction writing.
Yeah, creative nonfiction.
Yeah. And it's creative interesting nonfiction. How, like, you know, I'm seeing the sort of progression of you from a teacher to being a writer and journalist and now to this.
Yeah. And it's still kind of education, you know, like, but when I was teaching writing, I always felt it was kind of an indulgence. And I always wanted to do something more grassroots and that I felt like had an impact on people who really need, you know, who and I feel like I'm doing that now, teaching seed saving, teaching seed school, teaching grow your own food, teaching, you know, it's a different kind, but it's still, there's still that joy of teaching.
Yeah.
And then there's a Tibetan saying of like, you teach what it is you want to learn. So I feel like by teaching, you learn even more.
Yeah.
By talking about things, you learn even more. And then it's kind of beautiful. So I enjoy that aspect. I enjoy the interaction.
Yeah. Okay.
And I love it that, like,
I'm so happy for you.
Thanks.
Every time you post a picture of your life in Tao, I'm just like, nice.
Yeah, you get it. I think you get it. You get it. Anyway. Yeah, we'd love to come back here with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just a matter of time and logistics, but it's a nice thing to look forward to. I'd love to be able to do that in the future. Okay.
So thanks for this time. I enjoyed chatting with you.
That's the end of that.
Okay. I'm looking out at the view from this meditation, prayer, and reading room, and it's the sea and trees. And there's a strong breeze. Beautiful place.